Off the Ball, GAA.
Like the Graham O'Sullivan, who I thought was exceptional last year. I thought it was a disgrace. He never got nominated for an All-Star. I thought he was brilliant.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey better.
Welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod just before the league finals next weekend. I know we had the lower division finals took place in the weekend just gone by, but we're going to be looking forward to Division 1A and Division 1B next week. James Skell is going to be on analysis for Off the Ball alongside Tommy Rooney for it. Murph and I have to watch from home. But the Hurling Pod, just in case, as Murph reminded me last week, I forget doing this at any point, is brought to you, of course, with thanks to Applegreen. They are helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead, which guarantees at the outset, because who knows where this podcast will go, the sponsor mentioned has been put in the first minute or so. Looking forward to the league finals. Skell, how are you keeping?
I'm very well, gentlemen. How are we?
Murph, how are you?
Great.
Some people seem to just meander into the chat last week. I was having a great look at the YouTube. There's a bit more traction on the chat because of the nature of the live side to it. But I look at the comments up afterwards and someone's like, does Skell not have a first name? As if like someone has not got the memo 4 or 5 years in at this stage. So we kind of have a naming system that goes across the board. It's not me who dictates it. It's not Murph who dictates it. It's not Skell who dictates it. We just generally call each other by those names when we're messaging each other or talking to each other on the pod. I think it would be really weird if at this point we started to make a fundamental change and went, well, James, what is your consideration about Cork this week?
Joe, my mother, when she says my name, James, like it's quite off-putting because it sounds like I'm in trouble. You know, I've done something, it's like an immediate alarm. So I just can't picture Murph calling me James.
Okay. Never called you James, no. It's like, Will, you actually called me Paul last week.
I know, and it was weird. It actually felt weird when I said it.
Weird. Yeah, because I was like, why did he go to that? There's no need.
Indeed.
Very formal.
Look, that's a dynamic. And if you were, by all means, welcome aboard and stay along for the rest of the podcast. But if you got onto YouTube last week and went, what is this live thing that's going on? And then I see a comment and I go, right, I'm going to stick down here and I'm going to say, are you being particularly rude to Skell by not giving him his first name? It is not down to rudeness in any way. And a lot of people are saying as well, it's a very Irish thing too, that people just call each other by their second names. And oftentimes, if you're an O and you decided not to give it away during the famine and you still have it, people will still drop the O from my name, will oftentimes go, oh, Callaghan said that.
Yeah,
it's just an Irish thing.
Yeah.
And in particularly places like Kerry, the O's just go disappearing. It's Shawnee Shea.
Shea did that. Fair point. Never even thought about that.
Yeah, or Tomás Shea. And I'm going, Tomás O'Shea? And it's just like the colloquial down there is just, that's the way they go. We do have loads of irrelevant questions, which I think we should probably do early doors before we start looking forward to the league final. And one of them came in from Fintan McGuinness, which got two laughs along the way. Looking to artificially inseminate a heifer with a charlois, what does Skell recommend?
So what's a charlois, first of all, Will, right? It's a charlie, okay? My God. Let's get back to
it. I'm sorry. It looked French. I gave it a go. Go again? Was it a charlie, is it?
Well, charlois is the... It is a French animal. That's where the originator from.
So he's where the heifer is also originated from.
Indeed.
Yeah. Tell him to put in... he'd be putting in Arby. Or he'd be putting in Recife. One of those two.
Okay.
I think Recife is CH8580 or 8580. And RB is CH. I can't remember. I have to guess that. They're the straws you put in. And if she's a big heifer, he can put in CH4321 Lapon. No. There you go.
I'm going to nod along. This has all gone entirely over my head. But by all means, Fintan, you have your answer now.
Well, the best way I can explain this now is if you had a. Oh, this could get me in trouble now. If you had, in human terms, right, if you had a race that were particularly small, whatever country they come from, you could tell me, right, and you mix it with a race that are particularly large, that could pose problems for the carrier. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So you want to try and find for the first time, I was about to say first time calver, for the first birth, okay, you want to try and find a bull that has the least amount of calving difficulty possible so as not to do harm to the lady.
Fair enough. Okay. No, I get that.
I was about to go down a different road there and I had to stop myself.
You did. The boat was going one way and you just paddled the other way and it was all good. Jill Griffin, these are two that we will have to you know, come back and actually revisit at some point. But I would agree that we should have a look at the five free takers after the championship, when free takers are more settled on teams and so on, and we can re-rank them at that point. And apparently she is all for scale re-ranking his top 10 serials again. So I think mid-championship break, that type of time, that is the perfect time, Jill. Remind us a little bit closer to the summer. And when we get those little breaks, you know, the breaks between the provincials, we'll do the serials, no problem. Loads of people as well were sending us hurlers that they loved back in the day and cult heroes and all that type of stuff. It's amazing how that kind of little tangent towards the end of the live chat just ended up developing into its own thing within the chat afterwards. So I think, again, we should definitely pick a 15 of players who haven't won All-Ireland medals, and maybe even a 15 of cult heroes at some point. Again, it's one we do a little bit further down the track, but
that'd be enjoyable.
Why not? Mm. I say that we know that we're going to have breaks, because at this stage, Skell did the work in terms of checking that the preliminary quarterfinals were definitely gone for this year, and he has noticed the master fixture list, got an update at the tail end of February after Congress, so they're not in. So the Joe McDonough reward now is win the Joe McDonough, that's it, go enjoy yourself, no preliminary quarterfinal, that's moved on. And then there was a Central Council meeting on Saturday afternoon, and the report out of that, it's not 100% in stone, but the recommendation from Central Council to the Control and Competitions Committee is that neutral venues will be used for the All-Ireland quarterfinals this year. So if you missed after Congress, you finish in second place in the province, you play third. Second place, third. It crisscrosses across the two. So then somebody was pointing out that does not disadvantage the team who gets to the provincial final. I mean, it does. It means a week less preparation, naturally. But I kind of think, Murph, getting into the top two is a reward in and of itself, in that you go to a provincial final with the opportunity to win a cup.
Yeah, like the first thing that always pops into my mind is kind of that myth that sometimes if there was some sort of reward on the line whereby a team could finish third because it meant, you know, a more favourable fixtures list or second, it's very hard to aim for those things, and it's very hard to build your team up in a certain way whereby that is the goal. It's kind of like if you deploy a sweeper straight away before you're playing any team, you're deploying a sweeper. It almost undermines your belief in the team's ability to actually go and be successful. Mm. And I know it's a little bit different, but I just see those things straight away. And when if people were to say that, you know, maybe teams would hold back from being first. The one thing we've seen, particularly this year, is that every team over the last couple of years even, teams have recognised momentum now and just going and winning and not trying to do this whole balancing act of like keeping players fresh. We've seen so many teams, and I think this is a thing really from when we didn't know how the league final was a lot closer to championship. What was it previously, or was that in my mind where there was, or maybe it hasn't changed, but do you remember previously there was a conversation where we thought a lot of teams wouldn't like to go to the league final because it might hamper them going into championship?
100%. I remember that argument, Murph, was that especially if teams were out with a hard game in the first round of Munster, it would be maybe they'd prefer to just have that extra week, go abroad, do their little mini training camp, and that'd be better than going to a league final.
Yeah, that was definitely a conversation. But I think what we've seen that change over the last couple of years now is that teams have now gotten a grasp to it, kind of across the board. And every team now is recognising that momentum is the main thing, that you just can't afford to take your foot off the gas at any stage. Whether that be you're qualified for whatever, you know, you're not in relegation, or you're qualified out of your province or whatever it might be, that you now throw out a bit of a dummy team. That just doesn't happen now because we've seen teams falter then. They lose their momentum and find it very hard to pick it back up. And I think of the big momentum drop that would be an example was the one we kind of use as an example every so often. I think it was Waterford 22 when they were as good as pretty much into a Munster final, play Cork in Welsh Park, and Cork turned them over, and Waterford never got their momentum back again. The one loss actually killed it. So that's where my mind goes straight away. I'm not denying the argument whereby maybe people would think that is a bit of a disadvantage, and maybe it could be, but it's very hard for teams to not just aim to be number one and let that be that, because if you're powerful enough that you can decide how to manipulate your team so that you come second or third, fantastic. Very few teams can actually do that. Very few teams have the luxury of doing something like that. So, like at this week now, for example, I know Tipperary, there's my mic on again. And Kilkenny and all these are gone on their, and even football teams are gone on their weekend camp, even next weekend and things, because they came in that, you know, third, fourth, fifth place area, and they'll be happy at that. But you can guarantee they weren't aiming for that. They were aiming for higher. It just, that's the hand they're dealt now, so they fire away. So, yeah, I would be very doubtful that teams would try and avoid being first in that scenario just for the sake of thinking, okay, third is a better draw for us.
Yeah, like this reminded me a little bit, Scale, of your lads who were saying, don't go all at the Limerick game. Should be well off not to win it. Like, again, could you imagine a manager in the middle of the round robin saying, well, we're in a reasonably safe position. And bear in mind, you'd have to be in that safe position where you know you're going to finish in the top three anyway and go, don't go too hard at the last group game. There's no point in us going to a provincial final anyway. I just don't think that attitude would actually wash.
It would never happen. I think Murphy used a word there, belief, let's say. So if you're in a management position, you're always trying to establish a belief system that makes your team thrive. You want to kind of reaffirm to your team that you're the best out there. We have the best group of players in our system, you know, best skill, best fitness, you, and try and establish a positive frame of mind for the team to believe that they are the best. And then you go and undermine that completely if you say that you want to A, throw a game, B, you know, try and lower your levels. But I don't see a management team ever even saying that. The best way you can do it is through squad rotation. And even in the middle of a championship, when do we ever see that happen? In major figures, like we might see a player or two come in for squad rotation or they could be forced through injury. You'd never see a situation where 8 or 9 players could be changed out with the potential or possibility of lowering their standards. That just wouldn't happen. And it goes against everything that a manager or management group would try to instill their team. So I often hear these arguments. The arguments are always, you know, they're always raised by people who I believe have not had the insight, you know, or the opportunity to be within a squad who are thriving or striving for a championship at a very, very high level competition. So that's always, come here, it's public debate. And it's part of the game where people debate. It's fine. But when you're the other side of the table and you're in a group and you're trying to be a high-performing group heading for the Liam McCarthy, this kind of conversation will never even enter the realm, into the room. And it would be perceived, if I ever heard a manager or coach that to us, I'd be asking that person to remove themselves from the situation because they're not actually applying themselves to the fullest, if you ask me. So I can see where the debate comes from. There's loads of different topics you can debate, but this one, for me, is you keep going to the best of your ability, you keep winning. If you keep winning, doesn't matter who is coming against you. And I always go back to the championship before we had the round robin where Kilkenny could win a Leinster final and they could potentially have, oh God, Murphy, was it 4 or 5 weeks of a gap to a semi-final?
Maybe. Yeah.
And they always manage the fierce well. You know, so the best way to debunk an argument is to have physical evidence. And that was the evidence back then, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I know, come here, it happens in the club championship all the time, Will, where you could get, you know, you could finish first or second and you could have a bye in the first round, you know, into the knockout stages. And or to say, I'd rather have a game. No, I wouldn't. I'd rather have one less path or one less level of opposition to try to get over, you know. So, for example, if you met, let's just say Limerick finished third now in a quarterfinal or whatever, or finished third or whatever, would you rather bypass them and go into a semi-final or would you rather go through the Limerick route? I know exactly where I'm going. I'm going as fast as I can into the final stages, you know. And that's just a scenario I've painted. But if you're in a high-performing group, you want to get to the Ireland final in the least amount of steps possible. And the least amount of steps is keep winning.
Yeah. I think as well on the home advantage side, so people are arguing that maybe then the beaten provincial finalists should get home advantage if we're getting rid of the preliminary quarter-final. I don't know. For me, and by all means, in the comments, disagree and tell me why I'm totally wrong about all this. I just think it's unfair that your home ranking is based on something you did in the province that the other team didn't have any impact on. So if you finish second in Leinster, you get a home game without having played any of the games in Munster. You're third in Munster, but you have to go away from home just by virtue of the fact that they finish higher on the ladder on the other side than you, and vice versa, of course, as well. I think neutral venues are only fair. These teams haven't hit each other so far. The All-Ireland Championship is a bit of a reset with teams seeded based on what happened inside the provincials. But to me, it seems much fairer you play quarterfinals neutral venue, semi-finals neutral venue, and the final is at Croke Park, which is also a neutral venue. And basically, the All-Ireland Championship is played out in that way. And also, you get the benefit of bringing the quarterfinals to Semple Stadium or to Porky Cueve or to Gaelic Grounds or to Croke Park or wherever you bring it as well, rather than a team getting home advantage. Because, again, say if Waterford were to get there, we're already talking about, you know, the restricted attendance and so on. You imagine, in theory, a Waterford versus Kilkenny All-Ireland quarterfinal that was set for Walsh Park. Straight away, we talk about tickets being gold dust for this league final at the weekend. Could you imagine everyone trying to get into Walsh Park? And more power to Waterford if they'd finished second in Munster and whatever else, and Kilkenny had finished third. But if that happened, it'd be an absolute nightmare. And people straight away would be complaining about the fact it's not in a neutral venue. And if this was in Semple Stadium, wouldn't it suit everyone an awful lot better? So for me, neutral venues make sense. I can see why they've actually put this forward.
And I, yeah, neutral venues. And I think as well, I'm trying to think of another example that would undermine my argument, but I don't think there should
ever be... Someone in the comments will have one, don't worry.
Yeah, well, like I was just going to say, of course, like a home venue, let's say if you come first, let's say whatever, like if you come first in whatever competition and you, there's a home venue result of that, well, that's fair enough. You've won, you've earned the right. Whereas, you know, second and third, have you done enough to earn any sort of right? Like you came second, yeah, you came second in your province, which means you were beaten in your provincial final. Should you benefit of a home draw there for losing, like you lost? So like incentivizing a losing match, I know it wouldn't be a reason why teams would lose a match. I'm not saying that, but usually incentives such as a home draw is for the winning team. You won something. So there's another reason there where it's like, I just don't think, like when I've played in quarterfinals, Kelly, you've played in quarterfinals, part of it that makes it tough is, okay, you haven't won your match. Now you have to go on the road to a neutral venue and it adds that bit more of a challenge, as it should. You haven't won, so you shouldn't have the path easier. You should have the path a little bit tougher. But if you were to give a little safety net there, maybe a safety net, whatever you want to call it, little perk of having a home, doesn't make sense. I only associate those things with winning. So that'd be my other argument with it.
Yeah, okay. Grant, none of us see a reason why there should be home advantage for the beaten provincial finalists, and I don't think any of us feel that you could actually play for third place. I think on a practical level, it's almost impossible to do, especially with the nature of this. So often it goes down to the last round, who's going to be in three and who's going to be in two, and oftentimes 1-3 can be open going into the last round. The idea that you would actually be sitting there going, oh yeah, hopefully we can finish third here, nobody really would think that way. But that was the argument being made at the weekend anyway. But neutral venues is what's going to happen. Premier quarterfinals, Gonski. So they won't be happening. We'll talk about the Division 1A and Division 1B final in a sec. I did watch the Division 2 final. I know you caught some of it as well, Murph, on Saturday. It was on the TG Carra player. Kerry killed themselves in the first half with the wind. Was my straightaway takeaway from watching it. So Laois got goals from pretty much their first two attacks. And the second one by Killian Dunn was particularly really well taken. And once they had the two goals on the board, Nathan Corby could have had a third one with an attack about 2 minutes later. I think in the seventh minute, the flash just across goal. If you're playing against the wind, Murph, that's the one thing you can't afford to do. And as you said, this is a gale wind. It wasn't just a kind of a light wind that Kerry were playing with in the first half. And just when they found themselves behind as much as they did at halftime, they were done.
Yeah, I think it was 10 points at halftime, wasn't it? It was in around it, certainly, anyway. But that's the thing, like, where Tipperary Waterford jumps to mind in terms of a wind similar to it. But to be honest, if you're watching the match, you wouldn't have really known too much that Laois were playing into the wind, because they were playing a short kind of a running game for the most part anyway, bringing the ball into areas, and then weren't under really a whole lot of pressure to be shooting 50-50 shots. Like, really, the shots they were taking, they were in space because they were after creating it. But I just think of the Tipperary-Waterford match, whereby Waterford were up by about 10 at halftime, 9 or 10. And, you know, some people were saying you were worried, but you're saying, no, because Tipperary are going to have the wind in the second half now. Well, Laois were up by 10 and they were going to have the wind in the second half. So straight away, you were thinking, okay, this is not within striking distance. Like, even you'd be thinking, With the wind that was in it, okay, conditions were actually generally quite good, but the wind that was in it, you'd be thinking Kerry would have to be at least within three and then hurl really well in the second half here, because, you know, it is a good Laois team, in fairness. Like, you know, they've lads who can really take their scores as well. So, unfortunately with this game, it seemed fairly dead and buried early on. And like you said, the goals came very early. So it wasn't even a case where it was tit for tat and then one or two goals kind of changed the look of it 25 minutes in. This really wasn't a contest early on, which Kerry will be disappointed with, because they're a good team, you know, and I know maybe they haven't been hitting the heights that they were previously a couple of years ago, but it's still, you're in a final there and you're just disappointed that you don't turn up and lay more of a glove on the opponents. That's the real disappointment.
Yeah, I think even as a neutral just watching the game, I was just a bit disappointed, because I remember the match they played back in February and it was a really late score from Cormac Byrne that gave Laois a win. It was top of my head, I think it was 118-117 that day. It was really tight. And I thought it was going to be something similar. I know Laois had closed out the group stage really well, 100% record, even went to mix the team up in Ruislip in the last round, but still came out, you know, fairly strong out of the campaign. And geez, they won so comfortably in the end. It was the first goal was Mossy Keys, and then they got a very late goal as well from Fiacrisi Fennell, which pushed it out to, I think, 13 points at that stage. And Laois just came home at an absolute canter. So it was 3-18 to 13 points. It's not a massive amount, really, to analyse about the performance. But Laois look in decent shape going into the Joe McDonagh. I still think Kerry will be the best team in the Christie Ring, But obviously, this is a bit of a setback, but they will have promotion at least up into 1B for next season. But Laois kind of flying at this stage and have beaten a lot of the teams around them in the Joe McDonagh in the league so far this year as well, with the way that that group worked out this season. So I don't think they'll have any fear about taking on the teams who operate a division above them in Division 1B as well when it comes to championships. So that was it. A piece of silverware there for Laois. And as mentioned 100 times in the commentary, you know, we've said before that sometimes on the commentary, it's such and such is from a club, and therefore they get
Alan Tynan from Ross Grey. Alan Tynan Ross Grey was a big one.
You will never forget that Alan Tynan from Ross Grey. One of these is the fact that David Dooley was captain the Ferna for Laois, and yeah. I think I counted at least 15 times in the last 10 minutes that came up. And when he was going up to get the cup, it was David Dooley, captain the Ferna, coming up to get the cup. But yeah, he's forevermore, he will be the captain of the team in my mind when it comes to this. So
I noticed one of the games, I think I texted into the group actually, because it is what we call the Alan Tynan from Ross Grey effect, where like, was it Jerk Canning or someone? It was someone specifically was like Alan Tynan Ross Grey, and I was like, you just keep saying it. But there's one of the games there where it was Ronan Maher on captain Tiverdorn. I was like, he just kept getting the ball coming out. I was like, we know, he's the captain. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, before you have a pop at us, we've got all sorts of verbal crutches and fuck-ups and whatever else as well. But this just for some reason became a verbal crutch for the commentator. Every time you saw him, it was like, I'm going to mention he's captain of the team. I'm pretty sure every time he touched the ball, and he touched it a good bit, David Dooley had a really good game, captain the Ferna come up every single time. But anyway, that was a very, very comfortable win for Laois. Division 1A, I had a quick look at the finals earlier. I had a weird weekend. On Friday, I decided on the back of someone was asking us at the tail end of the main pod last week about you getting the concussion scale. And if anyone wants to listen to us talking more about concussion on the members pod, we did about 20 minutes of it midweek as well. I ended up watching the 2018 All-Ireland final again.
That is random.
Not to try and put you through anything, but I actually, for some reason, I must have looked it up and it was in like my YouTube algorithm. And I got a video of Tommy Walsh talking to Maura Trasa after the game and him giving his analysis. And then when he did, because of his excitement about the final, I decided to go back and watch the full thing. The full thing is on YouTube, by the way, if you want to watch it. And you know what struck me, Skell, about the whole final? I don't know whether you've gone back and rewatched it at any point. Was the amount of wides from both teams.
You're asking a man who was heavily concussed now.
I realised that.
Don't remember it.
have you rewatched it since, no?
Just snippets of it. I've watched the match in full. I've never watched a game that lasted full.
They were the commentary team were quite critical of your puck outs, by the way, as well. We might actually rewatch it at some point.
Jeez, we can, no problem. See, can I go back and change it in time? Yeah,
well, that's it. I think it was Canning and Dignan off the top of my head. Dignan was definitely the analyst, but they weren't specifically saying it was you, by the way, but they were saying that you were rushing your puck outs a little bit, and the ref actually went in twice to warn you about poking the ball out too quickly.
So the commentary were saying I was rushing the puck out, and the ref told me to slow down.
Yeah.
So obviously, Dignan and Canning haven't got a clue what they're talking about. Not a clue. Not a pesky clue what they're talking about. So we were under heavy instruction to get the puck out as fast as we could.
Okay.
Because Limerick's reset, I can remember that from a defensive perspective in the forwards, was top class. It was so fast, you know. Yeah. So it was get the puck out. And that started from when we played Clare in the semi-final replay. That Clare were setting up very, very fast in our puck out. That was kind of limiting space for the likes of Canning and Johnny Glynn and those guys. So it was get the ball out wicked fast. And actually, I remember on the analysis, the post-game analysis on the Sunday game that evening, Liam Sheedy pinpointed me practicing the puck outs fast in the warm-up because we got a goal out of Joe Cooney to Johnny Glynn. So in one breath, they're saying, look at this, the fast puck out helps to score. And in the other breath, then the two of them said, he's rushing the puck out too much. They haven't got a fucking clue. Stop this. Jesus. Not a clue.
Look, nearly 10 years on, they're not here to defend themselves. I'm just saying this is my take from watching the game. Oh. And you had a right old tete-a-tete with the umpire at one stage as well. The umpire was telling you not to puck it out too quickly as well.
I was told to keep going until I got pulled.
Fair enough. And you did get pulled. About 15 minutes into the game, they actually went in and told you to slow it down.
But yeah, finished, yeah.
It was a difficult one, though. Like, you know what, you've talked about the green wall with Limerick before. It wasn't that you were putting the ball into bad positions. It was actually just the fact that, Jesus, Burns, Hannon actually had an unbelievable final in 2018. He scored an incredible point where he picked one basically off Canning's hurl, went out to the middle of the field and just popped it over the bar. It was one of those kind of inspirational scores when everyone else was hitting it wide. But I could see how you could get frustrated trying to poke the ball up to those lads because they had like a huge halfback line.
But sure, they were brilliant. Like, and I suppose it was the start of something really special. And you have to understand, like, you can either go short your corners, short your half-back line, pick off one in the middle, or go long. So when we went short of the corners, Limerick had that decked, and they had Mulcahy and I think it was Glenn in the corners, and they invited the likes of John Hanbury and Toohey to come and attack them. Let them catch the ball twice. When they put the ball in the hurl again, now they have to catch it a third time, you know, or get rid of it. So they had that decked. Then you go into the mid-range, and the Limerick half forward line were so good and large at cutting off the likes of Puckhouse to a five or seven.
Yeah, they cut off Hayes was further forward back then as well, so he was another guy to get over.
The midfield was shut off entirely, and then you go long down on top of their half-back line. It was just, it was hectic, and it was the first time we'd seen, as the nation had seen Limerick adopt a strength as being the opposition puck out, if you know what I mean? And that's what they carried forward for years going forward. And they're still at it today, you know. And in real time, I remember thinking, like, where is the fucking gap here? Like, where can we find the gap? Because you went long, then as hard as you could down, and you have, let's say, Mike Casey, Reshlam, Johnny Lynn, you know, all breaks dead, comes out, they work it out, score. You go short into the corner, let's say they turn him over, goes out for a sideline score. You go to the middle, next thing, the first phase of the ball is delivered to someone like David Burke. He turns, he's tackled by two lads, turnover, score. You know, it was just, it was kind of, you're trying to knock on every kind of different type of door to see if something open, and I'm just getting closed in our face. That was all. So, but look, I remember that game, I think I remember in real time thinking, fuck, this is hard going. Like, it's hard going. We can't seem to find the gap, you know. But in terms of instances, like, I can't really remember anything specific, you know.
I think, to be fair, you'd have to go back and watch the full thing. But look, again, maybe it explains it slightly. If they want the ball to go dead and for you guys to have to reset, it makes sense to kind of shoot on sight. Because there was a lot of... Limerick had less finesse than maybe we would have associated with them a year or two later. It felt like a team that were still kind of growing into it a little bit. And they were taking pop shots from all over the place during the game. But then again, on the resets for the first goal, it was a turnover from one of your puckouts. And again, they seem to just really really enjoy it. Again, I say, it's on YouTube if people want to look.
It was a turnover in the puckout.
Yeah. Wasn't your fault, by the way. From memory, I think it goes out to their right wing back position, and then it's Mulcahy who gets the first one, I think. So Mulcahy and Flanagan had kind of pulled out a little bit on your puckouts, and Galan kind of stayed up a little bit further.
Right.
And then I think it was Mulcahy and someone else swarmed the player who was coming out, and they turned it over. And then, as you recall, the ball came through. Mulcahy kind of kicks it first, and then he gets it on the ground as you're coming sliding out.
Yeah.
And I think the way that Mulcahy hits it actually catches you out ever so slightly as well. I presume you think that he's going to try and pick it up, or he's going to try and go straight down the middle. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then it wasn't the best contact, but it just kind of went down with the side of you.
Yeah, I've seen that one on television. And, like, again, remembering the real time, I can't remember the real time. But from watching it back, it's like I face that type of goal, let's say, or that type of shot, or ground shots, you think he's going to fleece it, like, let rip. And sometimes they don't get the connection, and it kind of it throws off your timing entirely, if you know what I mean. But, like, shit happens. It's like a bit like someone I said to Murph last week, which, again, I didn't like the comments about some lad scored a goal or from tip.
Oh, he left you on your honkers or something like that.
No, yeah. I didn't like that comment, because that's Murph making a genuine hurling play. And it's easy to press the pause button and look at the still frame and go, ah, what's he doing there? You know what I mean? Or any other player, or any other, in that kind of instance. Like, sorry, Muff, I didn't mean to bring that back up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm getting towards. You know what I'm getting towards. It's easy to press the pause button and go, why didn't you do this? And I always say the hindsight, you know my phrase.
I felt it was quite rudely worded last week as well. But again, this is the nature of when you're just taking comments in from the public and so on. This is what tends to happen. And in fairness, a few people, I saw one person particularly stuck in the off the ball, like in the comments on the off the ball YouTube, was like, Murph was a great hurler. So you had a defender there somewhere, Murph.
Ah, yeah. Thanks.
And I'm sure you're not going to worry too much about it.
Not at all. No.
Indeed. Right. So this weekend, I had a quick look at the previous finals. It's been a while since Limerick and Cork have played each other in a league final. So I had to go scrolling all the way back. And they played and had a replay in the 79-80 season. Because as we recall back then, kids, the season used to start the year before. And Cork
didn't
won it. I know, because you imagine now if you turned around and suggested that in the split season. We should start the league in October or November again. They played twice. They played twice in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So the replay actually went back to the same venue. And in the end, Cork came out on top in the second game. It was 2-10 apiece the first day, and then Cork beat Limerick 4-15 to 4-6. They met a good few times in the 70s. They haven't met since. Then I said, when's the last time I was in the Gaelic grounds? Let's have a look. Went back 2017, when Galway beat Tipperary. You know, it was an all right year for Galway. Yeah, David Burke went and picked up another medal later in the year and lifted a different cup. I'm not quite sure. So both those years, Kel, were years that Galway won the All-Ireland. So it is 100% written in the stars, isn't it? That, 1980, 2017, that must mean a bit like, remember last year when I said to you guys, once it the Open is on in Royal Portrush, Tipperary win the All-Ireland, does this now mean Galway, it's written in the stars?
Murph, I want you to put your money where your mouth is, my friend. I know it's all fun and games here. I want you to walk down with the local bookies. I want you to go in and put a ton on Galway to win the Ireland and come back with
me. I can't back against my own team. That's the only problem. It's the only problem.
That's to get out of jail free card, is it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
Maybe this won't happen. By all means, though, if Galway win the All-Ireland, go back and clip this episode. Where are we now? Coming up on just about half an hour into the pod, you can find this clip and say, the boys knew back then. It was just the way the league finals fall.
No, look, to be real, we're probably a credible sixth in the rankings at the moment.
Oh, bad, bad strategy, Skell.
In fairness, now we're not doing too bad. Last year we were 10th or 11th.
I'd have 11th, me hole.
I'd have you second, Skell, and maybe a third, at Galway, right up there now, right up there.
Come here. I know it's slurry spreading season at the minimum, but I can smell bullshit off you. I can smell bullshit off you. Okay. And I'm 100 miles away from you.
Well, Senan Hederman disagrees with you entirely on the YouTube. He gave his power rankings. Remember last week we were saying, power rank them. And I was like, power rankings, oh God. Limerick number one, Cork number two, Galway number three, Clare number four, and Tipperary number five.
How would actually, you have two comments.
Where's Kilkenny?
It's very hard for Tipperary as well. God forbid I jump in. Like, considering, you know, Tipperary came ahead of Galway and like Clare. Clare is one. They're Division 1B. It's hard to give a Division 1B team higher than the current.
The All Ireland champions. 100% not.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. As an example. Yeah.
Again, this is not me saying that Clare won't finish in the top three in Munster before anyone reads that into it or whatever else. But right now, and power rankings are based on today, you couldn't feasibly make an argument that Clare are ahead of Tipperary.
No.
Tipperary's league was fine.
Yeah.
And they're the All-Ireland champions. They've shown they can do this.
And you could see, we could be sitting here now and let's say Tip crash out of Munster and Clare find themselves in a semi-final and you go, well, there you go. Now you're ahead, but you can't.
Then we'll re-power rank at that point.
Yeah, we'll own 3 weeks too. There's a big one in Turles in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Look, it was the exact same last year when Clare were coming in as All-Ireland champions and we had them high up in the power rankings. They're naturally going to drop down when they get relegated in the league and when they get knocked out of the championship before they would have planned. That's just the nature of it. We just turn around and we reevaluate at that point. It doesn't mean that Clare can't get back up to there. It's interesting, obviously, people are putting Kilkenny outside the top six. Isle and Kilkenny have got a very good chance to win the Leinster championship. I think people may have gone... It feels like people have almost overreacted to Kilkenny's league. But let's maybe talk about that before we get closer to Leinster itself. The game this weekend, like, it's pretty mouthwatering, Murph, really, where you get these two teams who I think are unlikely to hold back. I know some Cork supporters felt because of the team selection for the Gaelic grounds for the first game in the regular section that Cork weren't 100% going at it. But Ben O'Connor keeps saying they want to win everything. The players say they want to win every single competition going. They want to defend the league. There's no way that Limerick will want to lose on their home ground. They obviously know the feeling of losing out to Cork after the draw, as Limerick supporters will tell you, losing on penalties in the Munster final last year. Yeah. I think this is a perfect scenario for both teams to have a really good cut at each other a few weeks out from Munster.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, a lot of this is I suppose, off the back of both managers, you know, just talking about how focused they were on going ahead and winning. And the fact that Limerick won during the league by 8 points as well in the Gaelic grounds, like, that's a fair message. And Ben O'Connor has played the most amount of players, if I'm correct in saying that, he's blooded, or whatever way you want to say it, the most amount of players during the league. He probably has a bit of flexibility there in terms of whatever 15 he starts can in some way stand over that. Oh yeah, that's actually our best 15. Is it or isn't it? We don't know. But if they were to go out again from a Cork point of view, Cork up to the Gaelic grounds again and play Limerick and go out and take another 9 or 10 point beating. Okay, it doesn't mean that they won't beat them come championship, but it goes back to that belief thing we spoke about, albeit in different terms at the start of the pod, where it's like, you don't want the same team beating you too many times and on the same terms whereby they get it out to maybe a 3-score game, where it's like, that doesn't do well for any team. Now, we saw with Limerick last year, not a fantastic league, but then suddenly explode into the Munster Championship, and particularly against Cork, like, incredible performance. But Limerick would be in the rarity, I would say, in that capacity, in that a team that has not only such talent, but the mental fortitude to actually go and do something like that is a big thing. So for both teams, Yeah, I think it's great that I think we're definitely going to get two teams who are going to go at it and lay it off the back of their comments that Ben O'Connor's like, we're out to try and win everything. It'll be interesting to see what way Cork do approach this game, because obviously Limerick won the last one, played a team very similar that they've been playing throughout the whole league and had really good performers all over the field and a great match as well. But it'll be interesting to see how Ben O'Connor responds to this now in terms of what team does he go with? Is it very similar? Is there many changes? And then again, what are Cork going to do? You know, are they going to rein it in? Are they going to get a win? Are they going to be a little bit closer maybe? And it was just, you know, a small thing with a tip it in the scales. For Cork, did Cork be doing well now to make sure that it wasn't another 8-point beating? I just think you can't be accumulating them too close together because, you know, in the space of, what would we be talking, 6, 7, 8 weeks, if you took two beatings and then you're facing into them in a Munster Championship that you hope to go and win, that's a very tough game to turn up on, you know? Yeah. Particularly when your main argument for the year is that we're going winning everything in front of us. So, look, it is very interesting that way, and it's probably one of the most interesting league finals from that perspective, like the two main teams at the moment in terms of, like, obviously the finished top of the league, but would be perceived at the moment as the two strongest panels at the moment currently in the championship. It's not taken away from the All-Ireland champions, but these teams look like, geez, they have a lot at their disposal to go at any team here. So another round of this is brilliant. It looks like it's going to be a brilliant league final. And for me at the moment, I know you're not asking us for predictions yet, but like it's hard to look past Limerick again because the scenario is very same. Not much has changed in the few weeks. And yeah, it just like I think I picked Limerick that day. I can't remember who you picked. I think I picked Limerick for that just because I thought they were a little bit ahead. I didn't think they were 8 points ahead. 8 points is actually not that big of a beating in the modern game. But nonetheless, it's a convincing win against a really good Cork team. So there's lots to unpack in it. And there's definitely a nice bit to say that you can't just park what happens in this game before Munster. You know, whatever happens in this game for either team, there'll be a bit of baggage going into the next game.
I can feel the Tipperary supporters giving the caveat already, which is they lost by 10 points at Páirc Uí Chaoimh in the final last year, and come All-Ireland final time, they turn over the same opponents. But I think at the time we did give a lot of credit to the way that Tipperary had battled on in that game in not great circumstances, but it kept going and it could have been a lot worse than 10 points. And there's ways you can lose games. That's probably the case for whoever comes out the wrong side of this result scale at the end of this as well, is that nobody wants to take a comprehensive beating before going into championship. There's no way, I don't care what teams are out there this weekend, both teams will want to go right at this final.
Well, I think so, but I also think like Cork more so than Limerick, because I think the public forget that this match is on the 5th of April, and then within the space of 21 days, Cork will have played Tipperary and Limerick again in the championship. So it could well be the feasible option here, or a feasible possibility that Cork League Champions on the 5th of April and out of the championship, right? There's a fact on the 26th of April. That's just the way the Munster Championship goes. Like that's how front loaded, I'm afraid, that their championship is. And I'm going to watch this with keen interest over the next month to see how Ben O'Connor navigates this, because we know John Kiley and Canuck have done this on numerous occasions. They've kind of come across every scenario, you could say, between mixing the league and the championship and front loading the championship and whatnot. So they've come across, you know, every kind of possible issue, you know, or challenge that can be posed to a management group. But Ben O'Connor, let's say this is the first room. It's real first, and it's very, very challenging. So, like, as Murph said, let's just say Limerick, they play the game and they beat Cork by 7 or 8 points. It's going to be very difficult, right, to get things, you know, mentally, I would say, Murph, like, mentally to get yourself back in the frame of mind to go down to Thurles and take on the Ireland champions. And then a week later, to go back up to the venue and to play the, you know, the perennial Ireland champions. So it's a very different proposition that how a team of Cork's ability could have their championship decided in 3 weeks. You know, come here, it's an actual championship. I love it. It's a majorly exciting time. Whereas Limerick, if they lose the league final, they're not out until, I think it's the week after, that's it.
They have break week first, don't they? Yeah.
Break week first. They're on the bye first, aren't they? I think they are. Now, I'm open to correction. Someone's going to correct me, but I think they're on the bye week first. So, like, they have time to prepare as such, if you get me. So I think that in terms of pressure, I know a league final is not a very pressurizing situation, but for what's to come in a fortnight later, you want to put your best foot forward. So I think there can be no messing here with team selection. You have to go with your best foot forward. You have to go with your set six backs, your set six forwards, and see what you can materialize as a group 15. And not have, I think the time for testing the youth, which was all, I'm all for it, by the way, throughout the course of the league was admirable, great. But now we're in, I would say, a knockout mindset, because you have to trial it to its full entity before you come in the championship. So the only way you trial it is go into a cauldron like Limerick, play your best 15, throw the kitchen sink at it, and if you come away losing by a pint, draw a win, superb. That's a good result for Cork. Move on. You know, if you come away shipping a bit of a beating because you tried with some more younger players, not great for the whole group, if you ask me. But like, it's a very close game to call. Like, I think genuinely, it's going. I don't think it's going to be 8 points. I think it's going to be like a point either way. You know, and come here. It's entirely feasible, gentlemen. We have a draw as well. Entirely feasible. Now, why don't you correct me? Have we had a draw in the league so far this year?
Kenny Waterford.
Kenny Waterford.
That was a draw.
No, by a point.
Oh, sorry, you're correct. Yeah, you're right. There was a draw. Kenny Tip.
Yes.
Come on, the last time. Okay. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So I stand corrected. So we could have a second draw of the league. the point being is I don't see huge separation between the teams because they're now in championship mode, even though it's the league. They're now in championship mode with their best 15 thrown forward. And like you'll see now things set in stone, lads. You'll see the effect that Aidan O'Connor is now set in stone as a free taker. Do you get me? You'll see the team selection for the Limerick forward and set in stone. You'll see the forwards that Ben O'Connor is going to stick with that he trialed. Maybe William Buckley. I think Jimmer Healy is injured. So like the Walshes, you might see one of them set in stone now for a position in the forwards. You'll see his structure. Is he going to play into him any further up the pitch, or is he going to bring him back to his midfield? You'll see the two Downies. Are they going to stay beside each other in the half-back line? All this will become set, which we were toying with throughout the course of the league. Is it going to be, you know, is that just trialing for the short term, or is it going to be the long term? So this is where the interest level for everyone, us included, goes up a couple of notches, because we know what the plan is for each respective manager and their team selections and their formations. So that's why it's getting exciting.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing as well, Murph, when it comes to a league final, sometimes we have these arguments about whether a team want to get to the final. I take your point earlier where they go, the fixture schedule and all that type of stuff. And people talk about this about Donegal. Then just today, Donegal go and kick 320 against Kerry in a league final and win the Division 1 final at an absolute canter.
Oh, that's for a kicking.
It was unbelievable. It was an incredible performance, Gael. Like, Kerry were a little bit off it, but Donegal were on it, and on it big time.
320.
I just think when there's a piece of silverware there and it is a national title, there's not too many you can win. You win three in the year, a province, the National League and the All-Ireland. I don't see anyone holding back next week. I really don't.
No, and the point I was making where previously when this structure came in that I thought teams mightn't go as hard for the league final was kind of, I suppose, for want of a better term, they were nearly suspicious of getting to the final because they were saying, well, what does that mean for us, like having a tough league and then trying to face into a round robin, particularly for Munster teams, facing into a round robin that's fairly unrelenting. Do we really want to go and do that? But then we saw successive teams go and be successful in that year. Like, I'm thinking, did Clare win the league and then win the All-Ireland 24? Am I wrong in saying that? I think I had something in my head that something kind of broke that hoodoo where I was like, oh, wait, actually, do you know what? A team can go and win the league and then have a good championship. But last year with Cork and Tip, the two teams that actually went to the All-Ireland final, albeit the result was switched in the final. So I think once we got the trial and errors ran out and teams could see, actually, do you know what? It's far more beneficial if we go, you know, whole hog at this than holding back. Once teams saw that, now we're into that stage where teams aren't holding back, because I think injuries was a concern for some teams as well coming into, but these are two teams with enormous panels, so I think that's not going to be a concern. I really just think it comes back to probably the word of our pod for the league has been the momentum. It's just that's what they want. The word tonight was belief. You want that belief as well, because you need to call upon that later in the championship. It mightn't be like you go and you win a match on Sunday and that's fine. But like, you're banking all this bits of belief the whole way along the way, that when you really start to pick up speed and you're going to try and peak and win an All-Ireland, that's all in the bank. You have it all. There's no real kind of question marks hanging over any of your performances. So like I was saying earlier, for Cork, two defeats in a row to Limerick, there'll be a little bit of a kind of a, we need to deal with that now before we go back and play Limerick again, because is there a mental fragility there towards, can we actually go and beat Limerick? Now, Limerick, they've beaten Cork there recently and beaten them by 8 points. They lose on Sunday, they have a safety net there where John Kiely can be not happy with the team to say, listen, lads, you dropped your standards X, Y, and Z. It's a little bit easier to bounce back from that. But Cork, it's a little bit different. You know, like Scale says, they don't have a simple start to the Munster Championship, and they're facing Limerick very soon again. And we saw that even once teams get into the Munster Championship, you could start really well in the Munster Championship. It doesn't mean you're getting out of it. And we've seen teams have their championships derailed. So this is all coming very ticking fast now. And I just think that at the moment, this is a match that neither team wants to lose from the point of view of fantastic to win the silverware, but it keeps your season on the right trajectory at the moment by doing it.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to explain to your team by losing it that actually we wanted to lose that match. We're happy because now we're fresh going in. You're not fresh. You're still have to play in a 70-minute match, you know. So there's just, I can't find a reason at the moment why these two teams wouldn't go hammer and tongs.
Well, the thing about winning the league, it hasn't really hampered teams in recent years. So four of the last seven All-Ireland champions have won the league in the same year. And in two of the last three seasons, the league finalists, as in both the beaten finalists and the winner, both got to the All-Ireland final. So in 23, Limerick beat Kilkenny in both finals. Last year, Cork beat Tip in the league, but lost to Tip in the All-Ireland final. So there's a fairly clear trend there that, you know, teams that tend to do well early in the year, it hasn't affected them later. So any suspicion that people might have, ooh, you get to a league final, you're peaking too early in the year, maybe you're giving away too much or whatever else. Basically from 2017-18 on, a lot of the same faces are popping back up when it comes to the All-Ireland final as well. So
it's flying in the face, though, of what you've said earlier, that Galway are going to win the All-Ireland, Will. Like, because, do you know what I mean? You said 1980, who was it? Was it Galway won the All-Ireland in 1980?
Galway won the All-Ireland in 80, yeah, they did.
And last time it was in the Gaelic grounds, Galway won the All-Ireland. But now we have, Galway aren't in the final, and it's just confusing. It's confusing because...
Can I just say, in our history, Murphy, we've won five All-Ireland, okay? In 130 years, we've won five All-Irelands. So but, I don't think the stars are going to mind that much for us.
There's a lot lining up here. There's a lot lining up.
800 All-Irelands, Murphy. Okay.
I was going to point out the amount of times that the league and All-Ireland winners came from Kilkenny during the Brian Cody era, and it was just very clear that obviously Cody had no problem with his teams going for the league as well as going for the All-Ireland. So
it was different. There was a break after it, though, as well. Like, there was a big break, do you know?
So I'd say, you're playing four or five games back then.
If I'm guessing correctly here, Murph, I'd say you have four league medals.
I think I have five.
Five, sorry.
Oh, wow.
Oh. No, I won 2009 because I was on the panel in 2009. We won it.
Okay.
I didn't play. And then, let me think. We didn't win it in 11. 12, we won it. 13, 14. Yeah. I can't really remember after that. 15?
No. You would have won. You would have got one in 18 as well.
18 as well, yeah. I think randomly, we did it on the bus one of the days, and I think I figured out I had the same amount of league medals as Henry or something to this effect, because he hadn't... when it came to a stage of him starting to do cruciates and things, he didn't play much of the league or something. Because he was like, how many league medals do I have? So he actually had far more All-Irelands than he did league medals or something, by the anomaly of doing your cruciate or some crack like that. I can't remember what it was.
Do you know what? Like the early years of Henry on the panel as well, it was kind of Kilkenny didn't win the league. Mm. They did win it in 02, 03, 05, 06. Would you say he was injured a few times?
Yeah. You're probably going to correct me now.
Look, we'll let Henry correct you. But at the same time, you do have five during a time when Kilkenny did particularly well during the league. And, you know, converted into a few All-Irelands as it worked out as well. But, Brian's conversion rate of league wins into All-Irelands were pretty good, as you can imagine. You know, shock and indeed horror. He may have won a few Leinster titles along the way as well. But that's the way it sits. For you, Skell, going into this, we talked about Cork a little bit there. But just give me your assessment of where Limerick are at and what we've seen of Limerick so far this year before they go into the league final.
I think they're healthy. And to be fair, I know that I have this question every week, lads, about the presence of Dan Morrissey. I just want to know where he is. I just think it's a vital cog. You have your best defenders available. But in terms of question marks, he's the only one that I have, you know, for the Limerick team coming out of this league campaign. I think we've
As in his position or his fitness or what's your concern?
You can see, it's quite evident. Excuse me. We know the situation with Darren with the injury. We know what the faith, like John Kiley's been putting in prolonged faith with the likes of O'Neill, you know, English, obviously O'Connor, in pivotal positions. We haven't seen a huge amount of Peter Casey. You know, it's kind of like there's a bit of chopping and change that's quite evident in front of us, but just Dan Morris is the only one that I haven't seen or heard much about. But not saying that, I hope he's well, I hope he's fit, and if he's fit, Dan Morris, he plays. You know what I mean? But I think the Limerick are in good stead. I think they've found a nice rhythm, would you believe? Like in terms of, I don't think Aidan O'Connor, he started in the front forward last year for them, right? And he was influential, but he wasn't at the level he's at the moment. I think they've found a superb shooter in the middle of the park with him that complements the likes of Keane Lynch, who can find him. You know, if you have Keane Lynch in the middle of the park, who can find someone like O'Connor and O'Neill, who can shoot from distance, like it's always a strength for Limerick's ball that they can shoot inside and they can shoot outside. And they don't have to have huge form in the like of Hegarty or the like of, I don't know who, or Gillan. They don't have to have, because they're being supported so nobly by the three So the three, I call the three young lads, English, as I said, O'Neill and O'Connor. So I think they're in really good stead. I think it's going to be a good test. They're going to be a superb test because they won't get the freedom that they got in the especially in the last quarter and the last time they played Cork. Yeah. I think it's going to be very, very physical. Cork were the most physical team to put up to Limerick for quite a while. It was clear for quite a while. And then Cork have come to the party and said, right, we need to front up. And they have. And in fairness, the guys, I know Cork didn't have their full 15. They fronted up heavily in the first kind of 40 minutes, 45 minutes. And it was a really physical contest. And I expect that to come for 70 on Sunday. And but look, like that, Limerick have faced the challenge before that. And I know it sounds like I'm putting all my eggs in the Limerick basket. I'm not. I'm saying it's going to be a very, very tough Titanic-type duel with the point either way or potentially a draw. Very hard to call for me, generally. But what was swinging for me is what you touched on earlier on, is the home venue and the home support.
Yeah.
But like that, Cork, it's a bit like Dublin footballers. How they get the tickets, I'll never know. You know, but they travel fierce well, I have to give it to them.
Oh,
you know?
I heard talk this week of Cork supporters buying from Dublin clubs and people that they knew in the city and this type of stuff, and they got their hands on them. But that's what happens.
But come here. We've sat here and we've questioned nearly our own supporters at times as to the level of support they put behind our respective counties. So credit to Cork. They travel with their team. The same guy with that sombrero hat, he's there every day. You know, and fair play to him, he's now become like a part of the whole setup. But I think from a capacity perspective, I'd say it could be 50-50 in terms of numbers. You know, now I'm not discounting Clare and Dublin, please excuse me. But you know what I'm trying to say?
Don't worry. The GAA did. Did you see when they put that tweet out start of the week? It was like, Limerick and Cork supporters, you're not going to get your hands on tickets on general sale, so make sure you get through your clubs. I was just there going, Clare and Dublin will not be happy with this.
Yeah.
Look, as I have to use the cough button on my microphone, we were just saying there, Murph, it's kind of got to the point where Scale reckons that Dan Morrissey, whether he's fit, is only the real kind of question mark at the moment. And he was also making the point that now O'Connor has become kind of the nail-on starter at the 11. So in a way, kind of way Darragh Dunham has got injured, that means that now Keane Lynch could just drop back a little bit deeper. We know that English is already set there, and now you've got O'Connor as a kind of a very settled 11, the way that he's played throughout the league. You get the added bonus by the fact that Colin Neal's got way more hurling into him now at this point as well. Limerick look in pretty good shape. I did see someone last week arguing in the comments that almost felt like they were a spent force, or they were one of the older panels that were around now at the moment. Like, when I see the fact that these guys are still flying in Fitzgibbon and the players that are coming through and so on, they don't look like a spent force to me.
No, geez, they're not. Like, if it was the same 15 we were looking at for the last 5 years, I'd be saying, look at, you know, where is this going to come from? But the fact that, like, Aidan O'Connor, you pick three lads there now that are a change of the guard that was the four in a row, let's say. So you have Cathal O'Neill, Adam English, and Aidan O'Connor. And I say that knowing that, like, let's say Cathal O'Neill regularly came off the bench in those games and maybe would have started a few along the way. But he wasn't this, like, constant in the team. But like, he's been outstanding. Adam English has been outstanding. Aidan O'Connor has just shot onto the scene. You look at Shane O'Brien then as well. Like, you know, Shane O'Brien, last year, we were looking at him going, this fella is absolutely outstanding. And we haven't spoken about him as much at the moment because Aidan O'Connor has been outstanding. So when I see that, the first thing I think of is there's great competition there. But it's a competition that's blended nicely with, you have the experienced lads there who have been there, done everything, won all the All-Irelands, everything they need to do. But you've also introduced now your new blood. And I'm talking about four players there. Like, so that's a really healthy amount of people to pop back into a team. You also look at Peter Casey, who hasn't done a huge amount of hurling over the last couple of years due to unfortunate injuries. He's now back into the equation as well. So you now have savage competition in that team. And you also have the thing of where lads are looking over their shoulders, where that midfield isn't fully set because Keane Lynch could drop into that. But Keane Lynch could be at centre forward and you see Aidan O'Connor starting a wing forward or wherever it might be. So there's options there. And those options breed competition in terms of players looking going, I need to just squeeze myself in anywhere here at all to get a jersey. And when you have that, you always have that real freshness, real buzz in the team. And any player then as well who gets a jersey and actually starts, they're kind of going, geez, I want to hold on to it for the next day. So you almost get a performance out of, or guaranteed to an extent, the 90% of the team will get a performance out of them. So it's far from argue they're a spent force, because even the rest of the players that are there, they're all still relative terms young players. So like those lads who have been to the well, who have won the four in a row and all this, those lads, they're not a spent force by any means. So I would think, a wish is probably closer to the truth with some people by saying that they're a spent force. They're not. They have plenty of players coming through. And we've seen plenty of lads, even that bench is an extremely strong, tried and trusted bench as well. So the idea that people would go and say, no, Limerick are on the way out, No, not at all. There's so much left in this Limerick team. We could be easily looking at this Limerick team saying in 2 years' time, saying they're going for 3 in a row. That's very, very easy could happen if they build up a bit of steam. So from a personnel point of view, they have what they need to go in All-Irelands. Now, you could make the argument whether you think they are or they aren't off the fact of momentum or off the fact I think Cork have more than them in the tank or Tipperary, whoever, that's fine. But questioning this Limerick team doesn't have the personnel or a bit of a spent force, absolutely not. Like, look at what they did to Tipperary and Thurles. Unbelievable. And, like, just Tipperary never got out of the blocks that day. And we can talk about, we spoke with their performance on the night. But that was a sensational performance. Yep. Going out in a serious battle against Cork. Cork have tried 32, 33 players in the league. Outstanding panel, beating them by 8 points. Like, they've just showed week on week that, yeah, actually, okay, like the Waterford match. Not going to call it the blip because I don't want to take away from Waterford either. But their ability to go up through the gears in terms of performances week on week is unmatched. There's no other team that can do that at the moment. So it's just a matter of, can another team unhinge Limerick? Spend Force is very, very far from it. Very far from it.
I saw Keane on the YouTube during the week was saying, how do you think Hugh O'Connor's going for Cork? I haven't seen enough of him at senior level. Yes, he played the Kilkenny game. I think that was his debut. But I remember him more as a footballer. I remember being a very promising young footballer in Cork. Was on the football panel last year, then switched over to the hurling for this season. So I think I'd like to see a little bit more of him. I think he's only still in that kind of 21 kind of age bracket now. I remember playing underage for Cork and he was a dual player underage. But haven't seen enough would be my answer to Keane there. But again, he's one of those players that Ben O'Connor's looked at. Like every week there seems to be just someone getting kind of peppered in, getting a little bit of time here, coming off the bench there, hasn't played in a while, has come back in. They have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to their panel. It's very, very deep scale. The only thing is, they probably do need to probably nail things down a little bit now. It's fine to kind of experiment up until now, but he'll want to get the mix right when it comes to Munster. And I suppose this is one of the important things about this coming Sunday. It's a last chance for O'Connor to maybe get that mix right.
That's what I was talking about earlier on. Because you have to understand, like, O'Connor was also in a position of management for the last number of years with a large body of youth in Cork and the under 20 teams. And, like, you no doubt he would have sat in the stadium probably in Croke Park last year and had his own ideas on how to change things up, especially with personnel. So for him to get his opportunity this year to blood new players and trial and experiment and see what he has, I think it was paramount. It had to be done. And I don't think anyone in Cork will disagree with that. Because sometimes when you come off the back of a good season, some supporters would cry out for no change. Let's leave it as it is and try and just move the pieces around a bit as opposed to check personnel out. But I personally think that the personnel that he's used have impacted the team well. And even formation changes, that's why I was saying earlier on, he has tried formation changes. He's moved an all-star fullback out into the halfback line. You know, he's moved an all-star centre back out. You know, he's moved, let's say, an all-star nominees in terms of midfielders and backs up to the forwards to see what he can do, something different, to see can he get a blend. And then mix that in with the Buckleys and the Walshes and the kind of, to see what he has. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. But I think the time has come, as I said earlier on, where this 21-day period is now. It's so critical that he has to go with his best force on Sunday to trial it in preparation for the championship coming ahead. Because I don't think he gives it. I think it's the same both ways. No one will care about the silverware that they're going to win on Sunday. They'll all care about how they get on 2 weeks after. And that's only right. That's only right. But they couldn't get it. Like a great venue, capacity crowd, cup at the end of it. Like in terms of like what's on offer, superb. Top class opposition. But you have to see what you have now in its entirety. You have to play the players. If you were resting players or managing their minutes, fuck that now. It's time to put them all in now and start your season rightly. I think the season begins this minute, you know, with regard to Sunday coming. That's your best team forward and you're riding that train until the end of the championship. Mm. Rock on there.
Yeah. I think Dublin's Fair City had a fair comment on the whole thing about this weekend, because I saw a few people saying, well, how come football get their 2 days out in Croke Park and how come the league finals are somewhere else when it comes to hurling? Well, Dublin's Fair City says, I think it's actually a great idea having a double header for both league finals. I think being so close to championship, anyone who wants to attend the games will be able to get their hands on a ticket. I don't think a standalone Clare versus Dublin final in Tullamore or Portlaoise would get half the crowd. It's always good to have a curtain raiser to the main event like previous years where the All-Ireland minor finals are played before the senior final. It adds greatly to the day. I know many supporters are only interested in their own county playing, but for others like myself, it's two for the price of one, and hopefully it's a nice bonus to get to see the Division 1A final. So Dublin's Fair City, obviously a Dublin fan as well. Limerick versus Cork won't be holding back in any way, and he's given his power rankings and he's gone Limerick 1, Cork 2, Tip 3, Clare 4 and Galway 5. So he says, well, I know where I'll be spending my Easter Sunday. Gaelic grounds, I hope, anyway, after that comment. But I saw a few other people making similar ones. Chloe, Dublin supporter, is also saying that she goes home and away to Dublin all the time and she wants to get a ticket. If you're involved in the club, 100%er, you know someone who's involved in the club, you will get a ticket, I think, for this weekend. But I'm sure it'll be tomorrow when we hear the inevitable, the final has sold out, because I think general sale, if it was going to happen, is Tuesday. So we'll know more tomorrow if you're a general ticket supporter who's hoping to get your hands on a ticket for the weekend. But I think it's going to be fairly full. The 1B final, not to forget about it, Murph, Clare versus Dublin. Both teams have achieved what they want to achieve, and this is many times what happens when a 1B final comes around. Promotion was actually their goal for the year as opposed to silverware. But how do you see Clare and Dublin going on Sunday?
Yeah, should be a good battle. Again, funny enough, kind of think we learned a little bit more about Dublin during this league than we did Clare, in a funny way, because Clare have hit the heights of being All-Ireland champions over the last couple of years. You kind of feel like that you've seen what they're capable of, haven't lost many players throughout that time. Okay, like, you have John Conlon, who sustained an injury over that time. Shane O'Donnell was on the fence as to whether to stay on or not stay on, and he was injured last year then as well, so like only kind of really got reintroduced late. So we didn't see a whole lot under them, kind of basically giving teams beatings and being ran close by Kildare. With Dublin, you know, Owen O'Donnell back into the fray. We saw Liam Rush is now back into the fray. I'm trying to remember that happened during the week, which is interesting enough. Like, don't think he's going to be any part of this league final.
So just on Liam Rush, before we talk about the prediction for them, I thought it was interesting the way it was being reported during the week was that he's actually been training with them for a little while.
Okay.
And the idea was that he would come back in for championship but not be involved in the league final. I suppose if you've got a manager and a player who've worked together at Nafina, he probably knows all about Liam Rush's training schedule, all that type of stuff. The only thing that's kind of bizarre, he was doing a bit of punditry for TG Carr during the league, and here he is now coming back into playing the championship.
Yeah, that's true.
I've got to pay the wheels.
Sure, look, it's Mick Murphy did the same thing. Like, I mean, Mick Murphy, and all granted, Mick Murphy's one with Donegal was very much kind of he came back on for a season. It wasn't like he was watching it during the league. But yes, they do have the kind of cushion here, I suppose, of like, you know, Liam Rush playing away there, maybe was approached in the meantime to say, look, would you come and get involved and, you know, see how it's going, see how the body's holding up or whatever. You know, it's hard to know. And obviously, Niall O'Callaghan would have worked with him as well. So, you know, you do have that personal connection there as well. And I don't think, see, the other side of it is like, Liam Rush, for quite a good few years, was the main man for Dublin. Like, so when you see him come back in, it's kind of like the Conal Keeney. Like, when Conal Keeney... didn't he retire and then came back? I don't think anybody was kind of going, listen, you know, there was definitely no one in the hurling panel going, why is this fella coming back? You're just going, Jesus, great to have the services on board, you know. And the fact that Liam Rush has been hurling to the standard with Nafina as well, like, I mean, he's obviously hurling at a very high standard. So it is interesting. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see him or any involvement in the league final. Like, when you look at the two teams when they played... during the league, I think it was only 2 points in it. Was it 3.18? I was just checking up here, 3.18 to 1.22. But I still just feel that Clare have more ammunition in the tank to maybe go at Dublin here. Dublin are playing with a nice bit of confidence now at the moment. But I just, you know, I can't take away from what Clare have done over the last few years, the players that they could potentially have on the field. Like, we're yet to see the teams, obviously. But the clientele that they can potentially throw out, I just think provides a few more threats on the field than Dublin. But like, again, this is silverware that Dublin, not to say at the start of the year didn't plan on getting, but it's a long time since we saw, in my mind, since we saw Dublin lifting a bit of silverware. I'm trying to think of the last time.
You're again, probably thinking about the Dalo years, aren't you?
Well, yeah, like, I was waiting for someone to correct me, like, to say that, oh, no, they won 1B at whatever time. Well, they haven't. I can't think of anything that they've won. So that opportunity passing them by and not going and seizing it, I think would be, you know, I just don't think that's a reality. So I think they're going to make a fair tilt at it. But in my own mind at the moment, I'm saying Clare here by, you know, I'm going to say by, like, 5 points. I just think that, again... You know, this is said it through the lens of not having seen the teams. I just think that Clare, again, are coming in the same boat. We want to win this, and now we're really staring down the barrel of championship here, so we want a serious performance. So, yeah, I just fancy Clare here a small bit more. And I'd love to see Dublin, not to say turn over Clare, regardless who they're playing, I'd love to see Dublin go and get their hands in a bit of silverware, because Dublin have been the team over the last 2 years that have done what we hoped a team in Leinster would do, is that rise back up to the standards that they had before and start upsetting teams and then start performing consistently. So it's great to have Dublin back in this conversation. So it'd be great to see, like,
you know, a Dublin result or whatever you want to call it. But I just still fancy Clare here to go and win. And again, like I said, I'm going to say 5 points in this one.
Right, fair enough. Dublin last won the second flight, I'm going to say 2006. Is that fair?
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah. So silverware, you're obviously looking at, you know, the Leinster title.
2013, was that the last?
2013, yeah. So that, okay, that was the last significant piece of silverware that Dublin have picked up. Mm, yeah. I don't know whether someone will correct us now and say they've won a Walsh Cup along the way, but I mean, you know, proper silverware in the season. Yeah, yeah,
can't count that. No offense.
Yeah. The Liam Rush thing, Scale, I don't know, does he add a lot into this? I mean, like, he was very good in the final last year. But I don't know, like, where is he playing?
I have no idea. If I go back to what Murph said about Michael Murphy and Donegal, I was very surprised at that point, and he's still playing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what makes a person retire in the first place, and then B, bring them back and be able to operate at such a high level. I think Liam Rush has gone out of the game for 3-4 years minimum, off memory.
Yeah, I think it was 2001, I think, wasn't it? Or sorry, not 2021, I should say. Yeah,
yeah, like, and it's hard to back. Like, football, I would say you could nearly survive to a degree, right? Because it's majorly, I would say, fitness orientated first. Hurling is skill oriented first, and then fitness second, if you ask me. And I just think the pace of the game even has evolved since Liam Rush got over. So I'd be interested to see, like, where the situation first. I couldn't possibly see him at centre back straight up. I couldn't see him going there at centre back. So if he's not there, I'm not sure where. You know, but look, if again, who am I to say? Because if O'Callaghan, who's watched him at Nafina, thinks he's going to add value in some capacity and brings him back into the panel, I'm all for it. There's a reason behind it. It's not just a popular decision. It's a specific decision that's done for the betterment of the group. So I'm all for that. And I'll wait with watchful eyes to see where he plays, if he plays, and how he plays, etc. I sound like Mourinho there now at the minute. But again, like, a really good fella, sound lad, great hurler in his day, and just interesting where he goes. And like, again, he won't feature this week. You know, it's impossible to see how that would happen.
I think if he's going to feature significantly later in the year for Dublin, they've got Offaly first round of the championship in Leinster. I think he features in that game if he's going to be used.
Potentially, yeah. Potentially.
We'll see.
Go on. Sorry, No, far away.
No, I was actually moving off the Liam Rush situation. I was heading into the game.
Go on, yeah. Have you
Rush comments?
Well, yeah, I was going to say that I'm going to make two calls on it. I'd say one is that the second call's gone out of my head already, so I might just make one. But that's what it was. No, like, we're making a point about Mick Murphy. Mick Murphy came back because the rules changed, and they actually looked and said, actually, do you know what? It's not necessarily about a fella we're looking for here to go running end line to end line.
You could have reduced role.
You have a savage kick on the ball, start full forward, loop out, get a ball, kick over 2 points and drift back in. It was a change in the rules that kind of encouraged him. Hurling's only got faster, so there's no real reason for a Rush to be thinking that the rules have changed. But I actually think we could see him in around the full forward line. I think you know, like, Liam Rush has played. I've marked Liam Rush with full forward, like, during his heyday. So I think that he's going to be kind of a player that he's not going to sit in at centre back for Crummy. And I don't think they want to push Crummy up further. He's not going to be going around the middle of the field or the half forwards. Not to say he can't, but where is he most effective? Great ball winner, very physical player, like Heatherton as well. I don't think it's crazy to say that, you know, they couldn't play, either have him in there coming in for someone sitting towards the edge of the box and making that ball stick when it goes in. Or imagine you were looking at Heatherton and Liam Rush in the side of the full forward line and you had, you know, Keenan Sullivan off the shoulder or whatever it's going to be. Like, there's angles to be played there. We were talking about a very direct ball towards the box and you have them two bodies going fighting for it. It sounds dangerous. So now, absolutely can't wait to be made out to be a gobshite in a couple of weeks when he's at centre back. But I'm just throwing it out there now that I think if he comes back in that capacity, it'll be a full forward position.
Yeah, to me, centre-back would seem too radical as well. Like, I know Crummy has played further forward previously, but they seem to like him being their six.
Yeah.
And if they were to decide, do you know what, actually, Liam Rush is in out of the cold, he's going to go in, be our certain six. If that was going to happen, they would have played him in the league a little bit more. And you would have accepted, you know, he'll play in the Carlow game or he'll play in a couple of these games towards the tail end. I think if you're waiting till championship, maybe it's going to be a case of he's an impact player. Maybe there's a role somewhere else in the field is what they're looking at. I don't think he goes into a central position at six.
No, so the further you go back to field, the less likely a bit power player comes in. You don't throw in a lad at full back.
You're more systematic, my friend.
Yeah, and there's more room for error. If any ring rustiness gets exposed, further you go back to field. So the more likely a player is to join in, the more likely he's up in the forwards. You know,
I think so. I think it's the same reason I think at this stage that we've seen Will O'Donoghue get as much significant minutes at six for Limerick during the league. that I'd be very surprised if he's not the six for championship now, because they did try around a few at the start, but it looks like once the league finished, I'm sure the same for this weekend, Will O'Donoghue sits at six, and that's going to be his position probably for the rest of the year. Sorry, Skell, the Rush thing caught entirely off guard. Your general feeling about Dublin and Clare this coming weekend?
I think because, obviously, we know the league and championship were so close, I think now is the time where we see Clare clicking in championship mode. And like they're on a two-week on-off kind of basis. They're out, obviously, on Sunday on the 5th. Then they have Waterford first up, and then they have Limerick 2 weeks after that. So like they're nicely spaced, so they won't get huge opportunity, major opportunity to sharpen themselves up by this game. So I think they're going to go full duck and no dinner, I think, Will. So as I said to you, I think once they get to the final stages, regardless of who's in the final, they're all clicking into championship mode. Everyone's clicking into championship mode. So this is going to be kind of a championship feel. And I'm siding with Murphy here. I think that there could be a more considerable gap in terms of the scoreboard than there was in the group game. So you could be looking at Clare here at least six or seven, if you ask me. Especially if it's a dry day and the ball moves fast. You know, I always think wet days can kind of create parity between teams. You can slow, limit the score to a degree. If it's a dry day, the ball will move quick. I think Clare with their pace, especially in the forwards and midfield, can open Dublin up a bit. But it'll be interesting to see how Dublin tactics, how they apply. If they go long ball, big man, because if they do go long ball, that would signify maybe Rush does have an impact in the forwards when he does come in. But I can't see a victory going anywhere else but up to Clare.
Yeah, so we're clear across the board, I think, for 1B. You going to argue against that, Murph?
No. Clare. I said clear by five, first of all.
And 1A final, because no doubt someone's going to clip this at some point. Were we going Limerick across the board?
I'm going Limerick, yeah.
I am too.
I'm going Limerick by, go off and 2 points.
Grant, I didn't put in any score prediction. I'm happy.
Bring the score prediction. Go on, do it.
I'm going Limerick by 3.
Paul,
I'm going to go Limerick by 5.
Fuck off! Sorry, that came out very fast.
Sorry, that brings it back in by 3. Some from the last thing that you're in the league, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Much I'll just say 5. Yeah. Okay. But the thing is, we saw 25-point swing from the league final to the All Ireland final last year. 5 points is nothing. Like 5 points is we won that game. 5 points is what 2 points was 25 years ago now. Like the currency has changed. Inflation.
Yeah.
The euro, Brexit, the Straits of Hormuz are closed. It's 5 points is equivalent to 2.
You're not getting 10 Freddo bars for a pound anymore, lads.
And this is exactly what we're talking about. And now we're getting into the 10 cents used to buy a bag of meanies years ago. There's actually a great clip, right? This, do you know what I've actually, I had no plan to do this whatsoever. Have you ever seen the clip of the Limerick fella? Where Limerick win a game, it's back around the 80s or 90s, and straight away I can picture Crackety Ash know exactly what I'm talking about here. There's a lad with a hat on, Limerick supporter, and they're asking him, like, you know, about going, how did you win the match or something. I can't really know what the question was, but he's like, sure, if your mother gives you a list to go down to the shop, and the list of goods is £2, and she gives you a pound, sure, you can go and get the goods that she asked you to send down. And the point is basically... Point is basically like if you don't have the players, you can't go out and win the match or something. But it's a great clip. I feel I've just drifted into that zone there now by talking about the price of oil and meanies and.
I feel it was
a can of coke used to be 50p. Remember that?
You could go in and do savage damage with 50p in a
50p or a can of coke, or you could buy flipping 10 of the large cola bottles things.
You get 2 Freddo bars, you get 2 packets of meanies, and you might get a bottle of Cadet.
And then Tato was expensive at 20p.
So
the meanies and the snacks used to be 10p. And the chickadees. Remember the chickadees used to be 10p? And then Monster Munch were 30p. That was crazy. That was luxury entirely. Yeah,
not worth that.
Packet of skips then as well. They used to go to the distance, yeah.
They were 20p, yeah. Okay,
last week we started off with the hurlers. That's definitely.
I was about to say, this is getting into members' pod territory already before we go any further. by all means, stick in the comments as my camera disappears. Hopefully, the guys can still hear me. As we decide on the.
You know what happened here now, Will? I've mentioned the Straits of Hormuz. That's now. Somebody has.
You did. And for some reason, my camera started rebooting. So it'll come back again. That is it for this week. The finals this weekend then, 1:45 for the first game, which is Clare against Dublin. 4 o'clock for the Division 1A final, which is Limerick against Cork, both at the Gaelic Grounds. If you can't get to Gaelic Grounds, Skell's going to be on OTB talking about it. If you can't listen to OTB, The games are on TG Car. We can look forward to them. Of course, the Hurling Pod is brought to you by Apple Green every week during the season. Also sponsoring Hurling Across Off the Ball. They're helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. Paul Murphy, thanking you, sir.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Skell, we'll see you at the weekend. Well, actually, we won't see Skell on Sunday because by the time he gets back from Limerick, realistically, with all the stuff that's going to be going on, it's going to be a bank holiday Monday edition of the pod. So we'll record it early enough on Monday and we'll have it out in your feeds then. Skell, we'll see you on Monday.
God bless.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.